You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. A trailblazing figure known as the godfather of Asian American journalism has passed away. K.W. Lee died earlier this month in Sacramento at the age of 96, surrounded by his family. Born in 1928 in what is now North Korea, Lee immigrated to the United States, becoming the first Asian immigrant hired by a mainstream daily newspaper. In the 1970s, he made his move to Sacramento and was the chief investigative reporter for the Sacramento Union, became known for digging into bureaucracy, civil rights, as well as giving voice and coverage to Asian American communities. Most notably, publishing more than 100 articles on Cholsu Lee, a Korean American who was wrongfully convicted of a 1973 murder in San Francisco and faced the death penalty, but was eventually acquitted. Today, we're going to remember Lee's life and the impact that he made to journalism. We're joined by Lonnie Wong, a retired journalist for Fox 40 and the past president of the Sacramento chapter of the Asian American Journalists Association, AAJA. Dan Walters is a political columnist for the nonprofit newsroom CalMatters, who worked with K.W. Lee at the Sacramento Union, as well as Steve Chaneka, a journalist who co-founded Koreatown Weekly with Lee in 1979. It's a great group. Thanks, after the long intro, for joining us and coming here.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Well, Dan, I want to start with you. You wrote a really touching and powerful piece in CalMatters about K.W. Lee. How did you two cross paths? How long ago?
Well, it was in 1973 or 74. 74, I think, actually. And I was going to start covering politics in California, and I hadn't quite moved to the Capitol Bureau over there. Anyway, I teamed up with Lee. I don't know how he asked for me or I asked for him or somebody ordered us together. But anyway, we wound up teaming up to do a series of articles about how the legislature spent its money, its operational money, on offices and all sorts of expenses. And God, started digging into legislative records, because we couldn't get the legislative records, but into records of financial transactions, and found some interesting stuff about how the legislature seemingly spent its money in weird ways.
Mm. What stood out to you about him? Because you're also a longtime journalist in California.
Well, Lee was like a ferret. I mean, he just dug and was very inventive about figuring out ways to get information that supposedly was not available. In this case, we found that he came up with it, going through the state controller's records to look for invoices that were paid out of the legislature's account. And we sit through thousands of those invoices looking for patterns and whatnot. And that was Lee. I mean, he was a one-man wrecking ball, so to speak, as a journalist. He just kept digging and digging and digging. He'd already had a couple of big game stories before I missed out. He exposed how the legislature was kind of padding its pensions at one time. Also did a piece about how an assemblywoman was using the state's telephone to make long-distance calls all over the world to make reservations for her travel agency clients, things like that. The legislature even clamped down even more on its information after he did that one. But yeah, he was just a bulldog. I mean, something he couldn't get that thing in his mouth, and he kept shaking it, and he's not going to let loose of it.
A wrecking ball, a bulldog, a ferret. I have not heard someone described in that way, but that is awesome. Lonnie, you retired from Fox 40 just a couple years ago, but you have been a Sacramento journalist for decades. How did you cross paths, or when did you cross paths with K.W. Lee?
I think when the Sacramento chapter first formed in 1985 or so, basically there were a lot of Asian American journalists with different media outlets that really didn't cross paths. They didn't meet with each other, except for on stories out in the field every once in a while. And at that time, the Asian American Journalists Association nationally was getting together various chapters just to support one another. We all kind of went through the same things in terms of dealing with the editors and owners and things like that. And we had a lot of stuff in common. And KW was one of the first, at one of our first meetings, he was there as probably one of the senior journalist at that time and had a lot of experience and was made a big impact on us. As the people knew him, he was loud, boisterous, profane, and something you wouldn't expect normally from any Asian American, let alone Asian American journalist. So,
how did he impact you as a journalist?
Well, you know, the folks here are talking about, Dan was talking about some of the articles he wrote as a young journalist in radio. I started out in radio covering the Capitol, but I remember his series of articles on Bill Honig, who was a superintendent of public instruction, very progressive, very controversial, but because of that, very well known and wielded a lot of clout. And he did a series of stories on how his wife basically had a consulting business, and Bill Honig sort of funneled money toward her nonprofit. And as Dan was saying, I was reading his articles and said, where is he getting this stuff? Mm-hmm. And he would just dig and dig and dig. And eventually, a few years later, Bill Honig was convicted. He was indicted and convicted of conflict of interest and basically had to resign from office. So here's a journalist almost single-handedly writing stories and kept at it story after story after story, uncovering these nuances of this conflict of interest and eventually getting the attention of prosecutors and sort of taking down a statewide elected official.
It can be easy for the layperson to not appreciate the work of investigative journalism and the work that K.W. Lee did time and time again over his career as a journalist. Dan, I guess, can you speak to that? Why do you think he pursued journalism and investigative journalism in this way? What made him tick?
I think what makes us all tick to a certain extent, but particularly somebody who is willing to make the investment of time and brain cells into investigative journalism is you're just curious. You're curious as to why something is. And you just keep kind of peeling back the layers like an onion until you find out why this is. And that's the K.W. Lee. You have to be dogged about it. You have to be just get that bone in your teeth and you won't let loose of it. And that was very, very definitely K.W. Lee. I mean, he just, we've all had K.W. Lee experiences and his kind of profane encouragement, I guess you'd say, to, you know, yeah, that sort of thing. But he was a trip. I mean, he was definitely a trip to be around. And the guy was just tireless. If he's on to something, he was just tireless.
Well, Steve, that brings me to you. You and KW co-founded the Koreatown Weekly. How did you meet KW Lee?
Well, I was at the Sacramento Union at the time. I joined in 1977. And after a couple of days there, I was just at my desk and a couple of cubicles behind me was Lee. He had his own place. And I heard him yelling on the phone, "Hey, what are you doing? What are you?" You know, he's just yelling. And then after about 30 minutes, he says, "And whom am I speaking to?" And that kind of piqued my interest right there. But we became just friends, you know, at the newsroom. And I liked the fact that he was a little bit crazy. And in 1979, he sort of approached me. We would go to lunch at the China Moon. And, you know, he approached me about, you know, he was thinking about starting a newspaper in Los Angeles because he wanted to pursue the Cho-Su Lee case on his own because the union was beginning to crack down on him because he was spending so much time in the Bay Area, spending a lot of money, and he felt that they would not support him in the future. So that's the reason why he started Koreatown Weekly. So at the same time—
And that was based in Southern California, right?
It was based in Los Angeles. It's a great story. And because that's where Koreans were at that time. They were coming over, and it was a very large community and very immigrant. And but he felt that an English voice was necessary for the community to represent them among the, you know, the normal politicians, et cetera. And so he saw me kind of a young buck. I was sort of, you know, a little wild and crazy guy. And And so he proposed, why don't we go there? And so I'm an entrepreneur, and so I decided it'd be a great adventure for me. And it had nothing to do with Chosu Lee, my going with him. I did it because I grew up in an immigrant family from Eastern Europe, so I understood that experience. I live with my grandparents, so I understood how that first wave thinks and how they had struggles. And so that appealed to me. But we went down there, and our first edition was done on a compugraphic single-column paste thing at the Pacific Citizen, which was the Japanese paper. And we did that like twice. And I said, we're not doing this anymore. So I arranged for us to make up, to do all the composition and make up and layout at the Sacramento Union. So every week we'd go back and forth between L.A. and Sacramento. Wow. And we had it printed at the Herald Printing. And we'd take the papers down there, and we had distribution points throughout Koreatown.
Yeah, it's not like just clicking publish anymore. So
No.
Obviously, it's a lot more involved in that from a journalistic standpoint, but from a technical standpoint. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with journalists Lonnie Wogg, Steve Chaneka, and Dan Walters about the legacy of K.W. Lee, a renowned Asian American investigative journalist who passed away in Sacramento earlier this month. Steve, you also wrote a piece that was published in the L.A. Times about K.W. Lee. And just one quote is, I've known two important people in my life. KW is one of them. How are you reflecting on your interactions with him, your relationship with him, both professionally and personally?
Well, as I said, you know, I met him in 1977, and I stayed close to him throughout the years and spent many, many hours at his home. Because we were working on a book project for a long time. It's still not completed, but it will come out. The depth of his knowledge about culture and about you know the world, and he really gave me a lot of information about how he grew up, and you know when you talk about why he was so dedicated, when he first came here in 1950. He became a student at West Virginia University, and he was on the newspaper there, and he was invited to a local gathering of journalists where he was amazed at there were 200 journalists there, and he stood out because he was the only Asian, and so there was a managing editor for the paper Charleston Gazette, who wrote about that first meeting, and he said the young man stuck out in the crowd, approximately 200 newsmen and radio representatives, industrial editors, and journalism students, because of his obvious Asiatic birth. You don't expect to find him here. So it just went on that he looked so enthused about the meeting that he finally had to ask a question. This freedom of the press about which you speak, this is in 1951, you talk so much about how you must keep it. What I would like to know is, how do you go about getting it? Because he was from Korea. There was no free press. His original idea was to go back to Korea and start an English paper there. But the Korean War and other things came in. He actually lost his passport because he wrote a column about Syngman Rhee, who was the president of Korea, and Lee prophesied that when Rhee died, the place would fall apart. And Rhee's wife did not like that, and she called the San Francisco consulate and says, pull his passport. He's not coming back.
And he wasn't deterred by those consequences either, because he just kept going. Lonnie, it can also be easy to not appreciate the time that Lee was in and the barriers that he had to overcome. There's a lot that goes with sticking out in a crowd of journalists that are largely or all white and male. When you look at AAJA today, I know you keep in touch with this chapter, and you see the Asian American, Pacific Islander journalists across Sacramento and even the country What do you want people to know about his contribution to that?
Well, he got the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Asian American Journalists Association for good reason. And he was probably one of the first. I go around to conventions every year, and I always meet a lot of young Asian American journalists. And a lot of their complaints are working in markets or areas where there are no Asian Americans, to no support group, and not even a community that can help support their endeavors. And you think about K.W. Lee, who started out working in Tennessee and in West Virginia. And for those who don't know, he spoke with a thick accent, which belies his master of the English language when in the written word. Right. And so to work in that environment and have people mistake him as being Chinese and is amazing that he would even stick in that profession. And I think when he came to California and the Chol Siu Lee articles, he really found his voice because he found, I guess, a story that could encapsulate what a lot of immigrants have felt in terms of the power structure, the police, the DAs, even civic government, in which immigrant communities are marginalized. And when he found that voice, he just ran with it. And I think people recognize that, young journalists recognize that. The award-winning documentary on Chol Siu Lee was produced by
fabulous
interns that were
those
Steve
were
could address
well,
that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he
it screened at Sundance.
And it's been around the world. It's been on public broadcasting. It's an incredibly good documentary. But what I was going to say about that is that he inspired so many young Asian journalists because he taught at UCLA, he taught at Davis, he taught at Sac State, and he convinced the Korea Times, Korean paper in Los Angeles, very successful, to start an English edition in 1990. So he had a staff of young people around him, and they all band together. They're still very tight, and they call them the KT slaves, the Korea Time slaves. And they've been very instrumental in continuing to be in journalism. And there's a center named after Lee in Los Angeles, which was founded in about 2003. And it does a lot of great work focusing on community issues.
Mm. Well, finally, Dan, your headline read that you want him in the California Hall of Fame. What goes into making that happen? Other than the call out on the headline.
Somebody has to petition the governor. I'm probably not the right person to do that because we don't exactly get along. But somebody has, yeah, I think that's what has to happen. I think that KW's support group needs to push that hard because he truly does believe.
Absolutely.
Is it a Hall of Fame or is it a Hall of Achievement? I don't know. If it's just fame, then you put a bunch of movie stars in there. But if it's achievement, then he absolutely belongs in there.
Absolutely.
He's unique, pioneering, a person who has had a terrific impact on political stuff in California, and he deserves to be there. So I hope some governor, if not this one, some governor will see the rightness of that and do it.
Yeah. Well, Dan, Steve, and Lonnie, thank you for the time and the conversation and sharing K.W. Lee's life to a lot of people.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Lonnie Wong is a retired journalist from Fox 40 and the past president of the Sacramento chapter of the Asian American Journalists Association. Dan Walters is a political columnist for the nonprofit newsroom Cal Matters. And Steve Chineka is a journalist who co-founded Koreatown Weekly. We are remembering the life and the legacy of K.W. Lee, a renowned Asian American investigative journalist who passed away earlier this month at 96. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.